Hello, everybody. It's the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thank you for being here. I'm glad you showed up, and let's get into it. So, as an introduction today, I'd like to start with a little bit of reading, whereas usually I end the show with some brief textual quotations. But this evening, I would like to start with a quote from the Tao. And that's not to say, if you're new to the show, that this is a show about Taoism. I like to read and inquire from many different directions. Recently, and over the past couple years especially, Taoism has had a crucial importance to me. But we talk about a lot more than just this. So I want to use this text to elucidate more thought process so that we can become even more curious. And with that curiosity, we can grow and we can just be purely awestricken by this existence that we have. At least that's what I think. But anyways, tonight I am using Mr. William Scott Wilson's translation for Lao Tzu. This is chapter 66. There is a reason why the great flowing rivers and the ocean can make themselves kings of the myriad mountain streams. It is because they are well below them. Thus, they are able to make themselves kings of the myriad mountain streams. For this reason, if you wish to be above the people, you must invariably say that you are below them. If you wish to be ahead of the people, you must invariably place yourself to follow them up from behind. For this reason, the sage takes his place above, but the people do not feel him to be a heavy baggage. He takes his place in front, but the people do not consider him an obstruction. For this reason, all under heaven enjoy reverencing him, but never feel cramped or importuned. It is because he does not contend with others that none under heaven can contend with him. So this, to me, brought up a lot of ideas and a lot of thoughts, which is why I want to talk about authority tonight. And not just authority as in authority figures, but what the idea of authority is. How do we place authority? At what point do we accept it? How do we bring authority into our own actions? You know? So the dictionary has the definition for authority as the power or right to give orders, to make decisions, to enforce obedience. Just for a little bit of fun, I looked into the history of the word, you know, briefly using the Google search. In Old Latin, the word is auctor, which means originator or promoter. Newer Latin is auctoritas. Old French is autorite. And this is sequential. And then Middle English, the Old French became author, which I think we know what author, like typically we think of people who write books, but you can be an author of your own fate, for example. And from the word author comes authority, which I found interesting because of all the connotations that I personally hold for author. I have always wanted to be an author. I read voraciously, and so I've always looked up to people who have that label. But I've never looked at them as an authority figure, nor have I seen authority figures as having anything to do with the creative process. You see, authority for me has always been something that I've had to contend with. Yet, the authority that is inherent in the natural way that the world unfolds, how fate is given through the process of time. But we constantly have things happen to us. And this is the ultimate authority figure, if anything, is the world, especially if we have ourselves separated from that world. So, as a story, I work in a kitchen. I'm a cook. And so kitchens are always divided up into some sort of hierarchy. You always have leadership, which could be management or assistant managers. And then they have shift leads that will lead the team for certain day parts. And then you have other more fancier, quote unquote, professional kitchens where you have chefs and sous chefs. They call it a classical brigade system. But my point is that you have to have some sort of division of labor in any sort of industry for it to be able to operate smoothly. And the bigger your operation, the bigger your menu, the more things that you're trying to place out and create for your customers, the more specialization is required. For instance, I used to work at this place that sold sort of bar food, chicken wings, burgers, french fries, pizzas, and all the like. But they also processed a lot of their own meats to make steaks, to make ribeyes, to make beef patties and whatnot. And so this operation was so busy that there was one guy who had to work in the fridge itself, who had a table inside the walk-in fridge, who would cut meat and do everything that had to do with meat all day long because the demand was so high for that prep. So there was a job in it for one guy to do one thing, which sounded miserable to little old me. But it was necessary in this setting, and the specialization had created this need. But you can also have smaller kitchens. Like what I'm working in right now has a very limited menu. It's very small. It's potatoes and eggs. We generally have two or three cooks maximum in-house doing all the prep. Sometimes the dishes too. Sometimes there is no dishwasher. So the division of labor in this situation is a little bit different than the one that I just spoke of. However, there is still some pseudo form of need for a leader, or at least a driver. So imagine with me here, I have a rectangular grill in front of me. To the far right is nothing but eggs. In the middle section will be cooked all the toasted grilled bread, like grilled cheeses, tortillas, meats, vegetables that need to be sautéed. And then the left half of the grill is reserved purely for potatoes and hash browns and whatnot. And off to the left of the grill itself is a fryer, if you can vision that in your head. So one guy runs the potatoes and helps saute and helps plate and everything. That guy's on the left. On the right is the egg man. I am the walrus. Woo! I am the egg man. Woo! So eggs are very fickle creatures, and they cook incredibly quick. To curdle an egg, not like the curdling of a milk, but the curdling of an egg is when an egg starts to solidify, and that happens at a very low temperature, about 120 degrees, which is low enough you could stick your hand into 120 degrees, and it might be hot, but it wouldn't scald you. So Eggman really has to pay attention. And Eggman, in almost every diner situation, and this isn't my first diner, I've worked in quite a few different diners, Eggman typically has handleship of the tickets that are coming in. So they have to, what's called, call out things to people on the back line or who are further away from the ticket. But everybody's expected to read the ticket. But Eggman has this authority to drive the adventure, or if not an adventure, some sort of work effort. Oh, thank you for dealing with that. But if you're following with me here, the one who calls it out, like the quarterback. Yeah, that's a good metaphor here. So the quarterback on the team is the one who calls out audibles and any sort of things that need to be changed. So if you're calling things out, the first things you want to call out are the most important things. So everybody should have a firm understanding of what the team is doing here, though. But my point is that there are drivers in an effort, whether it's in a kitchen, within this metaphor, or any other endeavor. That's the word I was looking for, endeavor. So the driver can be up front, the one who's getting all incoming information, within this metaphor, the ticket, which is all the information that is driving the cooks to go, and then those cooks give things to the servers. So it starts a whole cascade of motion, you know? But in life, we have events happen to us where we have to work with other people when we're part of things like families, or we are literally driving on the road, or when we have to take direction in bureaucratic situations even. But sometimes you don't have to drive from the fore, which is why I wanted to bring up the story in the first place. So I'm generally not Eggman because I don't like that position. I don't like having that air of authority. And I can be rather quiet while I'm dropping my potatoes. And that sounds pretty lame. But I've noticed that by facilitating and helping out my team members from a position of less authority, because the less authority you have, the more freedom you have to wiggle, really. And when I have more freedom to wiggle, I can help facilitate and help other people. And by pushing, sometimes I feel like I'm driving from behind. And I was sitting in my work environment today, you know, cooking, and I had Lao Tzu's words streaming through my head, and that's the connection that I saw here. And so tonight we are discussing what it means to be an authority figure, even when nobody recognizes it, what it means to have a sense of power in a situation, and the different types of power there are. When we are in a position where we are driving from behind, sometimes there can be unaware pieces on the board, you know? If you're driving too quick from behind, this can cause irritation in the whole team as well. Especially if there's no mutual respect, and if your team members aren't aware that you're pushing them, this is disrespectful. Does that make any sense? Yet, I find it compelling, and I think that you should consider the impact that you can have from any place, even if you don't think that you are in a leadership position or a leadership role, even if you are in the grunt work and you're doing the shit work, look at your efforts and see how what you do compounds and how you can benefit exponentially others around you by taking advantage of the hidden mystic power, the background influence that comes from driving from behind. Why am I bringing this up? Well, do I even want this form of authority? This formal authority, more like? Some pros of authority. You have control. You have this quote-unquote power. There's ease that comes with doing things your own way. And when you don't have to wrestle with other people's wills, this feels nice. And there's an addictive quality to using that kind of power. But I digress. Some cons, you know, decision-making, as previously discussed in other episodes, making decisions is taxing and tiring as is. It's hard to have to make decisions constantly. Authority figures have to constantly make decisions. And I'm using authority in the forceful leadership form right now. More power means more problems. Also, heavy is the head that wears the crown. You know? I never want to have formal authority when I'm working personally, because I know how tiring it is, and I have an immense respect for people who take on that. And you know, and I don't think salary or any sort of wage ever catches up with all the extra bullshit that people in formal authority have to uphold and deal with. And God and nature help the owner of a business who holds everybody's paycheck and everybody's accountability in hand. You know, no matter what their attitude and no matter how they are, that position deserves some sort of respect and compassion, maybe a little bit of love. So let's consider the different types of power, because I've been alluding to formal authority and different types of ways of using authorship of reality. So, of course, there's forceful power. Compulsion, you know, telling people what to do under threat of carrot and stick or else. You see, this is the main connotation that I find behind the word authority. And it's the one that I've been reacting to and responding to my entire life. And only lately have I been looking at authority figures and trying to learn from them, and looking at what and how I want and what not to do. And often when we are in work and when people leave work and when they quit or they get fired, you know, my personal opinion is that 99% of the time it is because of some disparagement between the worker and a perceived authority or real authority figure. Another type of power I would consider influence, modeling behavior, being so sincere in your effort that no matter what anybody thinks, when they see what you are doing, they can't doubt it. Maybe that's a little jaded way of saying it. But some people carry influence, a natural influence, an inherent charisma. You know, some people just carry that air. Women are more likely to carry an air of influence and be able to move people just by their being. And I'm not being condescending. I think it's a beautiful thing. Women are beautiful things. And so are men in different ways. You know, but men often have to pursue more of a forceful power instead of being able to use their presence. But it doesn't not happen. There are very influential men that carry a very forceful presence as well. this blend of power and how somebody can carry themselves. And it's not all confidence. I think some of it's just genetic. It's how some of us are. I've always carried an intellectual arrogance that's almost a turnoff to some people. But people tend to listen to what I say. And I think that that's a heavy thing to carry. And now I watch what I say very carefully because I've caught myself in the wrong too many times. But if we worry about what we say, we can feel a little bit more sure that we're doing the right thing and that we mean people well. Because if you have no doubt, sometimes that can be dangerous. Another form of power, in a very passive instance, I call resilience. The strongest trees that grow hundreds of feet tall are sinewy and flexible, and they bend with the wind, which allows them to harness the natural chaos so that they may not destroy themselves. If you have something that is too rigid, it splinters. Resilience comes from an inner strength and from being able to withstand over and over and over and over again. Which is why those that have been beaten and downtrodden throughout life show such a resilient character that sheens like alabaster. Resilience is practiced. And unlike influence, I don't think people are born with resilience, though some people are tougher. Being tough, the toughest person can be quelled by a sickness and be turned to a whiny, indulgent infant. You see? But being able to withstand life's constant struggles and strife with a smile on your face, as Sisyphus did as he rolled the boulder up in spite of Hades' judgment. Perseverance comes with softness and flexibility and being able to say, okay, there's another one. What kind of power do you want to have? So, in group scales, power can be distributed as well. And here's some buzzwords that I'm sure you can remember from geography, or not geography, social science classes, or some college course, or you might have read somewhere. Authoritarian leadership is where you have one ruler and you have, like, that would be like a monarchy, where you have a king and a queen, or a dictator, or a totalitarian, you know, or a one government. Democracy is where everyone rules, and there's no one person allocated to make decisions in order. I personally believe there's never been a true democracy. But the one place that you can have democracy is within your own being, with all the different segments of yourself and all your different feelings towards things. You can implement more of that, but then of course, sometimes you need an authority within yourself as well. And you can have a complete lack of any sort of leadership. You can have anarchy where there's no ruler, with the beautiful French word of laissez-faire. Yet, out of all of these, force, influence, resilience, authoritarian leadership, democratic, and or no leadership. Are any of these wrong or right? No form of power, no implementation of will is inherently wrong or bad. it really comes down to how much weight you amount upon the act. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Godhead Krishna and man Arjuna are discussing whether or not going to war and killing one another is palatable, where Arjuna can't seem to stomach having to go kill anybody, which is a very human reaction, and I sympathize. One of the teachings that Krishna pulls from this moment is that he doesn't need to focus on the fruit of the action itself, of the death. The only thing that needs to be focused on in life is the action itself. And during this moment, Krishna reveals a vision to Arjuna where he shows him his true form. And in the text, it's displayed magnificently, where Krishna becomes Kali, this massive demon-headed monstrosity, the most fearsome thing that you could ever see. And both sides of the army starts flooding into this thing's mouth while it's just chomping on both sides, you know. And he says, look at me, I'm time, you know. In the end of the time, everybody's going to die, you know. I'm eating them all right now just as I eat everything that appears. Because that's what time does. It seems to deteriorate in entropy, if you witness it that way. Yet every action begets a fruit. So, doing one's duty. And I know this story is really twisted and almost vulgar when glimpsed from the Western sense. Yet, what I draw from it is that the power is within the action, and how we worship the fruit and why we implement the power is what seems to poison. And power, as I mentioned earlier, is addictive. Even subtler, gentler habits where we're helping people, you know, that feeling can be addictive. And when others reject our help, we can feel powerless. And then we can react with sadness, guilt, or anger, which can further deteriorate the relationship. So whether or not we're trying to help or whether or not we are trying to abuse, the implementation and manipulation and fabrication in our realities is addictive. And I'm not saying we shouldn't do it like some very other firm beliefs might. I do think we should manipulate our realities to an extent, for the better and with goodwill. So I always want to be mindful about how I use my power that I have found myself amassing. In Hinduism, they have what's called the Siddhi, S-I-D-D-H-I, or Siddhi, which is another word for power. And there's stories about those who start to meditate and practice mindfulness will soon start to be able to become more one with the collective or whatnot. And with this mindfulness, you are able to start being able to be more empathetic towards other people's feelings. And it's almost like you can tell what they're thinking beforehand. And this is one of their telepathic powers or whatnot. And I'm not saying anybody has telepathy, but if you're more mindful and you're more caring, you do start to notice other people's feelings more, and the relativity of how much you notice feelings versus others, you know, this is a power in itself, just sheer empathy and compassion. What kind of power do you want to have? A fantastic book that I read last year was a book by Carlos Castaneda called Don Juan. I did an episode on it towards the beginning, which might be a little bit more conclusive on the text because I'm not going to go into it too deeply tonight. But I am going to tell one of his beautiful little tool stories, which is I'm going to call it the different vanquishings, the different enemies that we have to defeat in life on the way to sagehood. And for Don, it would be to become a shaman, a medicine man, a man of power. So the first enemy that we have to vanquish in life that we're born with is fear. We're born with fear, and fear is the root of all of our enemies and all of our negative actions and all of the pain that we inflict on others and ourselves. When we are able to vanquish fear, we are able to obtain clarity. Clarity, though, is the second enemy. Once we become clear, everything seems just obvious. We stop questioning. We stop becoming inquisitive. We don't doubt what we do. So the best thing we can do for ourselves is to doubt our own knowledge. And self-doubt, once we're able to think outside of what has become so clear to us, once we vanquish clarity, we obtain power. Because we become more open to the knowledge of the world, I would believe, to the knowledge of God for the religious nature. But power corrupts, and it corrupts even the best of men or women or whatever you identify as. So we must eventually overcome the power that we witness that we have in our worlds, and we must put it down and let it go. But once we have vanquished power, we come to the last enemy that we have in our lives, which is old age, because as Kali earlier purported, time is eating everything. Yet all we have is what's right now. So what would the shaman do right now? What kind of power do you want to have? What impact do you want to have in your world? So why does Lao Tzu the master push for the sage to lead from behind, to be high, yet sink low like the river? Did you catch the symbolism behind the imagery that was in the chapter 66, I believe? Yes, that was what it was. So I'm going to go back to the text real quick. So I don't want to bastardize it. All right. There's a reason why the great flowing rivers and the ocean can make themselves kings of the myriad mountain streams. So the ocean is king to the myriad mountain streams. You can go on Google Earth right now. And so what happens with water is that it springs up at the high elevations on the planet. But you have these little tiny fast-running streams because they're steep and because water hasn't had time to collect to itself, because that's what it does, is it wants itself. It collects to the whole. Yeah, that's what it wants. And so you have all these little tiny streams, thousands and thousands of them, and slowly they start to collect together, so they start to run into each other. And when you get to the bottom of the mountains, you get these bigger, but still fast-moving rivers. And then the further and further you get away from the divides and the higher elevations, you get these large rivers. And then when you get to the ocean, you have these huge, like, transmissions of fresh water into salt water, which makes brackish, I think is what they call it. So the whole time, the water is in this mission to get as low as possible. And the king of the water is at the very bottom. So to be a sage for Lao Tzu, to have power, but not power, anti-power, is to fulfill the wishes of the whole. And the whole is everything. It's your loved ones. It's your enemies. It's the immaterial, you know? I think a form of power comes from refusal as well. A lot of people are carrying around a lot of pain because this world has a lot of pain in it. And one of the things we have to do is be able to refuse the direct weight. And that doesn't mean to not help them carry it. So I see this interesting distinction, because we have to accept everything that is and what must be done. So we have to accept even their trauma and accept that it's happened and accept them for who they are, because we have trauma and we've also had to go through these stages of accepting who we are for what we are. And why what happened to us made us why we love ourselves, maybe. We have to accept what has happened without holding it directly. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I do think it's possible. I have money. I interact with financial schemes. I have a bank account, but I don't look at my bank account often, and I don't consider money often. I know that I have to have it in this life, but I don't carry it all the time. So I have it. I've accepted it. I've accepted its value, and that I need to do it, this financial game, but I don't carry it all the time. But the act of acceptance is almost the opposite of a decision. And that helps boost my, at least, virility and how chipper I am in life, because I'm a very happy person. But being in reality means accepting every bit of every other person's weight. And that means listening as well, but not holding it too tight. There is an ability there that we can do for others. We can take on their story, and we can let them know that they're heard, and let them know that they are. And that in itself is healing. And we can do that for anybody. When something bad comes, we can add more weight to any event, any weight that we already happen to be carrying, any weight that we have instituted as a habit, gradually, maybe. But when something bad comes up, we can make it worse, is my point. It's very easy to make a heavy situation heavier just by dreading it. We're saying, shit, oh man, my life is fucked. What a shitty day. You know, this is just a shitty day. Like, I had somebody that I was working with the other day who was so happy in the morning. It was like God smiling down on us. And then towards the end of the day, we'd had the shit beat out of us. And then he was just like, this is just the shittiest day ever. And the next morning, it was a bad day. And I was like, man, I had a great day. And God smiled at me all day. Like, at what point did he stop smiling on you? We can also add extra weight to a present moment or to a future moment that's coming just by not wanting it to happen and by not accepting it. So we can, I think another way that we can help others when it comes to the additional weight is trying to pull them into the present moment. Means what I've noticed is I try to look people in the eye. I try to listen to them wholly. I open myself up completely when I'm interacting with somebody. And sometimes it's very uncomfortable because I'm awkward and I've never made good at eye contact, but I look at somebody just straight into the eye. And that act pulls them in to this moment. Because that's why it makes me feel uncomfortable, is because I'm still not used to this moment. But it's powerful. All right. The last bit of power and authority that I can think of that I feel needs some consideration is inner power. What is on outside is mirrored within, and what is on the inside is mirrored without, in a Venn diagram that eats itself. We have to trust ourselves. That's another way that we can help cultivate and instill power in CD. I had a difficult day today. I finally got an apartment in order. I got a call back for one that's available. And so I went to go give money for a deposit and to do some paperwork. And one of the things that's really difficult about being a single parent, especially if you're the custodial parent, is that you're due child support. And if you're not paid child support, you have to prove that you're not paid child support, which is one of the dumbest fucking hurdles and most stressful situations that I've had to encounter over and over and over again in my parental career, is having to prove that I rarely get paid child support. And I didn't even want the $50 a month to begin with. So it's just a bunch of ludicrousness. But I needed to have my custody agreement that I had got, my court orders from my son. And that's what I need for my apartment. And I haven't seen these papers in a very long time, like at least 5 years. And so I didn't know exactly where they were. And so I started panicking in front of this lady. And it was, and it was a really shitty encounter where I wasn't my best self. And I feel very bad and shameful for this lady who had to hold my hand through the situation. But I got home and I was looking for the custody agreement, and I went through some boxes, and it took about an hour, and it was kind of stressful, but my mom was there and she was great. And I found it, and luckily I had put all of my custody papers into a separate envelope at some point a couple years back. They were all in order. They were all ready to go with all of my child support stubs from when she did happen to pay me several years ago. So, yeah, like it was all there and I had it. And the reason that that situation was so difficult and I amassed so much more weight on myself is because I did not trust myself. I didn't trust past me. I didn't have faith in the moment that it was going to work out. And I just expected it all to go to shit, because I didn't trust my aptitude, you know, my own power, my own authority in my life to be able to find things and to take care of crucial papers. I didn't trust any of that. I didn't trust myself. And because of that, I had a very stressful and difficult time, you know? And none of that needed to happen, you know? And I have a feeling that this is a human hole that a lot of people happen to fall into. So if you'd like to talk about it, as always, you know where my email address is. It's very, very available. So tell me about your power. Tell me about your aptitude and tell me about your efforts. I want to hear how you've been manipulating your world and whether you feel good or bad about it. And this inner power that I see and how I have, how all of us have to trust ourselves and our inner power. As is within is without. We have to trust the world. We have to trust the future. We have to trust the moment. And we have to trust our ability to interact with what I think is inherently still what we are. There is not much distinction between us and it, between me and that. What is within is without, truly, not figuratively. So tonight I would like to end with a little bit of Joseph Campbell. This will be short and sweet. So, significant images render insights beyond speech, beyond the kinds of meaning speech defines. And if they do not speak to you, that is because you are not ready for them. And words will only serve to make you think you have understood, thus cutting you off altogether. You don't ask what a dance means, you enjoy it. You don't ask what the world means, you enjoy it. You don't ask what you mean, you enjoy yourself. Or at least so, you do when you are up to snuff. So remember to enjoy yourself. Remember that you are appreciated. Remember that you are important. Remember that you have impact, that you are powerful, that you are potent, and that you are the primary benefactor to your life and to everyone you love. And that love and that compassion is contagious. It is viral. It's more viral than any video. And if you speak kindly to a stranger, I personally believe that that stranger is going to go speak kindly to more than one other person. So it's always proactive to shed kindness. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. I'm so grateful. And I hope to see you next week. To sign us out, here's my beautiful boy with Asko.
People, this is Ask O and the Gingerbread Man.
How you doing, big game?
Good.
Well, that's good.
100 good.
100? Let's try not to move this table around too much. Okay.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? So are you ready for my question?
Yes.
My question for you this week is, do you like me telling you what to do?
No.
You don't? Why not?
Because I don't like you telling me what to do.
How does it make
you feel? When I'm trying to relax, you keep telling me things and I have to do them and I don't get to relax.
Yeah, sometimes it's difficult when you'd rather be
relaxing. Mm-hmm. And then you just mess up my wax, and I just be really mad and do this stuff.
But sometimes the stuff that you had to do is really important, right?
Yes.
Yes. So, what, when you have to tell somebody what to do, how are you going to do it?
No, I don't know.
If you had to tell somebody what to do, how would you do it?
I don't know.
You never thought about it?
Yes, I never thought about it.
Well, that's a big question, huh?
Yeah, it's a really big question.
Well, one day you're going to have to be in charge of somebody.
Like what?
Well, I have a very strong feeling that you're a very special little child. And I think that you are destined for great things. And maybe one day you'll be in a leadership position. You'll be leading people. I think that's very possible. What do you think?
Yeah.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be a superhero.
Yeah, what would your superhero name be?
It'll be Superkick.
Superkick?
Yeah.
What color would your costume be?
What color? It will be Iron Man's costume.
Really?
Yeah, I want to build a lot of stuff.
Well, that's super cool.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here with me tonight. I appreciate you. I love you.
Love you.
You want to say bye-bye to everybody?
Bye-bye! This is Astro and the gingerbread man. And I'm a custom cut. No!
Wrap it up, kid.
Okay, I just felt my dad's going. The gingerbread man is going to press the button.
I'm going too soon.
Okay, this question, if you love this show we made, I hope you like it too. You get the stuff we have and you start doing it too. And tell us what your is. Your is.
You're great.
Sorry, I just can't do my mouth really good.
You're amazing.
Okay, bye.
Bye.